Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
So we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
don't you know we're gonna have a solar-topia?
Yeah.
Solar-topia.
Yeah, we did. We started to burn many things we found. That's the wonderful Dar Williams singing with Pete Seeger and David Burns, B-E-R-N-Z, and the Rivertown Kids on the Grammy-winning album Tomorrow's Children. Back for another hour with the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. I'm Harvey Wasserman, talking to you from Columbus, Ohio. We have a victory to celebrate today. Today is August 24th, a Tuesday, and we got a court ruling today that we're going to memorialize. 25th, actually. Today is August 25th, and we got a court ruling of banning a merger by utility, Exelon, or Exelon, I guess it is. And, listen, I got Dave Kraft on to talk about it. Dave, are you with us?
Yes, I am, Harvey. Hello.
Dave, jump in and tell us about what's happened here with this court ruling, because it's a big deal, and we're going to talk Nixon over the whole hour, but I do want to talk to you about this.
Okay, I appreciate the time. I have to say I'm kind of an outsider on this one, calling from Illinois, but Exelon Corporation, the nation's largest nuclear utility, had attempted to conduct a merger with the Pepco utility, which operates on the East Coast within the Washington, D.C., Maryland, Virginia area. And each of the public service commissions there had to approve this merger, and today the Washington, D.C. Public Service Commission unanimously voted against the merger, which pretty much kills it. The company Exelon does have, and Pepco also have the opportunity over the next 30 days to appeal the decision. But as it stands now, the merger is off, and from our point of view, it's a good deal for the folks on the East Coast. Hello? I somehow have lost the connection here, I think. I don't know if you can hear me. I can't hear you.
Dave, I'm on.
Okay, good. Gotcha. All right.
Okay, so go ahead. Give us the details.
Well, I'm just going over the executive summary now. The three-person commission, as I said, voted unanimously to oppose the merger. Their contention, as I read this in the summary, was that in order for them to approve this, the merger had to be in the public interest of the constituents, the ratepayers in that area, in the Washington, D.C. area. And the total body of information provided by Pepco and by Exelon to the commission indicated that overall this would not be in the interests of the ratepayers of the Washington, D.C. area. So they found against the merger. As I said, there'll be an opportunity for appeal, no doubt, and I'm seeing some of the trade press weigh in already that a lot of pressure is now being put on Exelon's CEO, Christopher Crane, to re-persuade the commission to reverse its unanimous decision against. So we'll see how that gets played out in the next 30 days.
All right, so what's the bigger meaning here? And we're expecting Tim Judson on the line. Tim, are you there? Has Tim called in yet? No. Okay. So, Dave,
Tim will probably have more details for you. But here's the context of all of this. For the last 2 years, the Exelon Corporation has been leading a national charge. We call it their nuclear war against renewables. Both their lobbying efforts in Congress, coupled with what they're doing legislatively in the various places where they have reactors, in Pennsylvania, New York, Illinois. Have been decidedly anti-renewables, anti-efficiency. And so what's been going on is a lot of their reactors in these, in the deregulated energy markets have been money losers. And as a result, to try and stop the hemorrhage of capital, Exelon has started to look into areas where the markets are still regulated, which is the case with the Pepco utility. That market is regulated, meaning that the company will get a guaranteed level of profit by operating in that district. So,
just a second, Dave. I want to introduce you both a little more thoroughly. We're talking with Dave Kraft of the Nuclear Energy Information Service in Chicago. And Tim Judson, you're on the line?
Yes, I'm here.
Good.
Okay, and Tim is with the Nuclear Information and Resource Service in Washington, D.C. And what has happened is, today, August 25th, that a court ruling has come down, which is a major victory, or considered a major victory, for the renewable energy anti-nuclear forces. And you two guys have been principals in this battle to win this. And, of course, you're also principals in other battles, especially in Illinois and in upstate New York on reactors there. So we're going to spend the hour running through these situations, but it's so rare we get to celebrate a victory here. I want to make sure people thoroughly understand this. So, Dave Kraft, you were explaining, and Tim, you can jump in whenever you like. First of all, Dave, what court made this decision?
Well, actually, Tim would be in a better position to respond to this, so I'm going to defer that one to Tim and let him take over on this one.
Okay. Tim, who made this decision and why?
Well, the decision today was made by the District of Columbia Public Service Commission. That's the regulatory body that that governs public utilities in the District of Columbia, the city of Washington, D.C. And what was on the table was, over a year ago, Exelon had cut a deal with the local utility called Pepco, Potomac Electric Power Company, to buy Pepco, to take it over. Pepco is one of the largest sort of independent utilities left in the country. They have 2 million ratepayers, and so this was a strategic move by Exelon to acquire 2 million new captive ratepayers and make itself the largest utility company in the country, as well as the largest nuclear power generator.
Exelon already
owned the Baltimore Gas and Electric Utility, which it took over a couple years ago, which was in Maryland. And Pepco's service territory straddles, Washington, D.C., Virginia, Maryland, Delaware, and even part of New Jersey. So this was a deal that had to be approved by three different states four different states and the D.C. Public Service Commission. And D.C. was sort of the last hurdle. Everybody else had already approved this deal several months ago. And, there had been, vigorous opposition in Maryland as well as in D.C., but D.C. had a very large, we had a very large grassroots coalition that has been fighting like hell for the last year to defeat this merger. And in the end, we won the day today.
Well, why were you against it? What was the green consumer reason for being against this merger?
Sure. Well, Exelon is one of the utilities that's really been fighting renewable energy, tooth and nail for years now. Exelon, in fact, is the only company that's ever been kicked out of the American Wind Energy Association, which happened in 2012 because of how vigorously Exelon has been lobbying against incentives for wind power and other renewable energy sources. And, D.C. has actually had a really strong grassroots community-driven movement to move in the direction of renewable energy, through rooftop solar and energy efficiency and other renewable energy sources. And so people really saw, what Exelon was trying to do here, which was to take over, the local utility of the nation's capital as a way to both buck itself up financially, but also to give itself more political clout in D.C. to be able to kill renewable energy. And that's, in fact, been Exelon's strategy for over a year and a half now, as their nuclear business has been struggling, and they see the writing on the wall that renewable energy and energy efficiency is going to make it, completely unprofitable to continue operating nuclear reactors into the future, that Exelon has been leading as sort of a nationwide corporate campaign to not just kill renewable energy, but to use the demise of renewable energy as a way to subsidize the continued operation of nuclear power plants. And we brought that message to D.C. The coalition of organizations in D.C. Understood it immediately, and we were able to show that this was not just going to be a threat to renewable energy, but also Exelon's goal is to make electricity cost more, to be able to use its massive corporate and political power to raise the price of electricity that people have to pay to operate nuclear power plants. And that is actually the basis for what the DC PSC decided to do.
Hello?
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
So the DC PSC, it was actually a very careful decision because they know that Exelon is likely to wage a really vigorous legal appeal of this whole decision. And the PSC, DC was one of the, was one of the jurisdictions, 15 years ago, that decided that there was an inherent conflict of interest between the same company, being responsible for distributing, energy and servicing electricity customers and the company that's generating electricity and selling electrons. And so they forced Pepco 15 years ago to sell off its power plants and become a distribution-only utility. And they saw the risk that having Exelon come in as not only the biggest utility company in the region, but also as the biggest generator of electricity, as an inherent risk to their ratepayers. And so they decided on that basis too that this company was going to be too big to regulate, and have an inherent conflict of interest to sell nuclear electricity at the highest prices, to DC customers.
Wow. So what was the vote of the PUC, Public Service Commission in D.C.? Was it 3-2, 2-1? How did that count?
Sorry, Harvey, can you repeat that question?
What was the vote on the commission? Was it 3-2, 2-1? How did it work out?
It was
out?
Unanimous. It was a 3-0 vote.
Wow, we like that. That's really
good. Yeah, we weren't sure up until the last minute whether they were going to approve the deal, whether they were going to try to place a lot of conditions on it and make Exelon just kind of walk away. But in the end, they decided to reject it outright. It's really an incredible victory for democracy as well as a victory against nuclear power.
And Harvey, I would point out that the commission even points out in its executive summary of its decision that the overwhelming majority of the thousands of people who provided testimony and comments on this docket was to oppose the merger outright. So the people of D.C. itself in vast majority were saying to reject the Exelon proposal. I think that's significant.
So let me see if I get this right. Exelon, whose name, like so many other utilities, sounds like a laxative, runs how many nuclear plants in the United States?
Exelon operates, well, currently it operates 23 reactors in about 7 states, I believe. The most obviously is, in Illinois, where Dave and the coalition are fighting tooth and nail to stop a huge Exelon bailout bill. But they've got reactors in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Maryland, New York, and they even operate a reactor in Nebraska.
So 23 reactors is almost 25%, almost a quarter of the nuclear power plants in the United States. And correct me if I'm wrong, my understanding is that they wanted this merger with Pepco, P-E-P-C-O, as opposed to TEPCO, Tokyo Electric Power, which owns Fukushima, so that they would gain 2 million captive customers to sell nuclear generated electricity. Is that correct?
That's right. That's right. And it would have given Exelon, Exelon is already one of the biggest utility companies in the country. They have about 7 to 8 million ratepayers in Illinois, Pennsylvania, and Maryland. But this would have really put them over the top and made them the biggest company in the industry.
And the merger,
Harvey. Yes. One distinction I would add to that, to Tim's comment, just as he came in on the call here, I was making the point that the distinction between Illinois and the market in the Pepco region is that in Illinois, Exelon is operating in a deregulated energy market. They sell their electrons on the open market to the highest bidder or whatever bidder they can get. In the case of Pepco, though, it's a regulated market where the rate, those 2 million ratepayers are kind of captive to decisions by the Public Service Commission. So in a sense, it's a much more archaic, traditional model where they have a service territory they provide service to, and then they're guaranteed a profit. And the reason this is significant is that, quite frankly, Exelon has had its butt kicked on the nuclear plants in all of these deregulated markets because of the lowering cost of electricity. And so in order to shore up their profit margin, they're trying to get into the areas where they can be guaranteed a profit, like in the old days, you know. So that
yeah,
is
I would actually
worth
correct
noting.
That. I mean, DC is also a deregulated market as well. What they were really trying to do here was to require. As Commonwealth Edison in Illinois and PECO in Pennsylvania and Baltimore Gas and Electric, the other utilities that Exelon owns, they have a separate division that is regulated, that has a regulated profit stream, which Exelon was trying to, you know, was trying through this to sort of bulk up and to shore itself up on the basis of, you know, kind of diversifying itself is the way that it pitched it to investors. But the issue with DC was also that, Exelon, by sort of having, sort of both sides of the fence, generating the electricity and distributing it, was going to have a tremendous ability to manipulate all the rules by which electricity is priced. And so that's, it gets into the sort of arcane ways in which, electricity has become basically a commodities market. But this was really a move by Exelon to create recreate a vertically integrated monopoly with only one side of the fence that's actually regulated. And to be able to basically work all sorts of schemes to manipulate prices, which we're seeing them do in other places as well.
So they're playing a game here, both in Washington and in Baltimore. Now, how does Pepco get their electricity now? How are the people that Exelon was trying to captivate currently get their juice?
Yeah, well, this is really the one of the things that the PSC became convinced of is that, Pepco right now is a company that is purely about customer service. They distribute electricity and natural gas to people, in Maryland and D.C. and the other states. But they don't actually generate electricity. They're not actually trying to make a profit on the generation of electricity. So Pepco has, been much more open than Exelon is to distributed solar power, to energy efficiency programs, and to acquiring electricity at prices that are reasonable for customers as opposed to the ways in which Exelon is basically, under pressure to inflate the price of electricity. Pepco has been a pretty low-cost producer and consumer, and that's something that the D.C. Public Service Commission really saw was that this was really a choice about the future. As they said today, when you're in a rate case trying to decide, what the utility's, rates should be, that's a decision you make, that affects customers for a couple of years. This was going to be a decision that was going to affect customers forever, and they took that very seriously.
Well, with Dave Kraft of the Nuclear Energy Information Service in Chicago and Tim Judson of the Nuclear Information Resource Service in Washington, we're talking about the astonishing victory in front of the Washington D.C. Public Service Commission, turning down a merger, which was basically not a merger at all, but basically a takeover of the Pepco utility, which serves 2 million people, by Exelon, which is the number one nuke generator in the country. So I'm assuming then that in the future, the 2 million customers of Pepco will have better access to potential renewable resources than they would have had Exelon taken them over. Is that correct?
Absolutely. That's in fact what everybody was fighting for.
Great. Has Pepco rolled out any programs yet to promote rooftop solar or increased efficiency or anything like that?
It's interesting. Since, in 2014 or 2013, Pepco was rated as one of the as one of the best utilities in the country for for connecting solar solar panels to the grid. And in 2014, which is the year that that they cut the deal with Exelon to become Exelon's subsidiary, they became they backslid terribly and became one of the worst. And what we expect is that basically Pepco was already starting to serve Exelon's business model. Just to cut this deal. And, I think the expectation is that, Pepco remaining independent is actually going to be really helpful for getting more solar on the grid in D.C.
And Pepco, I assume, is an investor-owned utility. Is that correct?
Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so is there any chance, Dave Kraft and Tim Johnson, that the people in the Pepco region will make a move now that take Pepco over and make it a municipal utility?
That's actually been talked about, and in fact, there was legislation introduced in the D.C. City Council this year to start exploring that process. There's a lot of interest in municipalization here as well.
Well, that would be great, and then you really speed ahead with renewable energy. You're having a publicly owned utility. That's of a reasonable size, unlike, say, Tennessee Valley Authority or Bonneville Power Authority, that the people can actually have an input in. That always leads to lower rates and to more acceptance of renewable energy. Isn't that true?
Yeah, I think that's generally true. And, in fact, the other thing this coincides with is both Maryland and D.C., the public service commissions have already announced plans to start proceedings to do what's happening in California and New York right now, which is to restructure the entire utility business so that utilities aren't purveyors of electrons and they're making their profits solely on the basis of how much energy they sell, but to change the whole utility business model to become one of managing distributed energy efficiency and then distributed energy resources, so that they'll be able to accelerate the deployment of solar power and wind energy and energy efficiency, smart grid, microgrid, energy storage, all the things that are going to be necessary to get us to a carbon-free, nuclear-free electricity.
Well, let's discuss that for a minute. And then, Dave Kraft, I want to talk with you about Exelon in Illinois. Where is Exelon based, by the way?
Corporate headquarters is in Chicago, Illinois.
Oh, okay. So you're close by. But let's talk about this other business model here for the utility industry, because that's the crux of what's going on. It's certainly going on in Germany and starting to talk about it in California. What is the nature of the utility business of the future? How do they make a profit by selling less electricity if they're getting people to go to solar and to microgrids and things like that?
Well, since you brought up Germany, that's a perfect example case study to start out with. The largest electric utility in Germany is called E.ON, E.ON. And last December, they put out a press notice that the company, which has, now get this, we talked about how big Exelon was. E.ON has 33 million customers throughout Germany, and they have
33 million?
33 million, and they have 60,000 employees. Now, here's a company that historically has been relying, on the traditional utility model. You have coal plants, you have nuke plants, you sell your electrons, you get paid. Well, last December, they put out a press statement announcing that the company was going to split in two, that, yes, for the time being, they would rely on their coal and nuke plants to keep the lights on and the services provided, but that the future of the company was going to move in the direction of expanding energy efficiency, expanding renewables, and going into what they call energy services. And that over time, they foresee that that is the future for the entire corporation. So that gives you an idea of how you can actually make money by not tying yourself down to being an electron retailer. You become an energy services provider. As Amory Lovins has said for the last 33 years or 40 years or whatever it's been, none of us have jars of electrons that we store under our beds. We don't want electrons. We want the services that the electrons provide. And I think here's an example of a company, a very large international company, that gets it, that the day of selling electrons is in the past. The big box utility, where you have large power plants and huge spider webs of lines crisscrossing the country, is essentially over. They grasp the fact that you enhance the reliability of your systems if you can distribute the distribution lines, the transmission lines, you overlap them, you modernize them, you put in smart grids. These are the kinds of things that future-thinking utilities are engaging in. And it's not just happening in Germany. There have been similar announcements even here in Illinois with the NRG company, which to date still has a lot of coal and nuclear on its books. But there, too, their CEO, his name is David Crane, as opposed to Christopher Crane of Exelon, has announced that they see their future is in renewables and efficiency and energy services. So this seems to be, you know, the 100th monkey situation amongst forward-thinking utilities is we get off the big box model, we stop being electron retailers, and we provide the kinds of energy services that customers, industries, institutions really want. Tim, you want to add anything to that?
That's just right. And I think that, you know, this is really becoming an issue of, you know, sort of corporate control versus democratic control as well. You know, as we've seen with, you know, the whole sort of climate denial debate and those sort of things, you know, this is, you know, the companies that are invested in trying to keep the status quo going for as long as they can are, you know, really thrashing about with a lot, you know, exercising as much political power as they can, you know, in order to prevent change from happening. And I think, you know, what we're seeing happen, hopefully increasingly, especially with the nuclear industry, is that we've got to plug up all the watering holes in the desert. Exelon has been trying to push a number of schemes in order to keep its business model afloat, you know, like trying to get the clean power plan to subsidize nuclear power to keep old reactors going on the myth that they reduce emissions. They were going to try to, you know, become the biggest utility company in the country to spread out their, you know, their nuclear debts over a larger customer base. They're going to try to screw up climate policy and renewable energy policy in Illinois by creating this massive bailout for themselves. As we're fighting these individual fights, we're really plugging up the watering holes in the desert. So the nuclear industry has to confront reality and get on board with the transition that needs to take place. And what we're seeing, like, you know, in D.C. is a perfect case where, you know, people who've traditionally been working on issues of, you know, solar power and renewable energy and energy efficiency, you know, got it that this company was absolutely antithetical, you know, to their vision for the future, and all united, you know, to make this win happen.
Fantastic. So we're really looking here, and certainly with the advance of the technology itself, the very rapid advances in photovoltaic cells, in wind energy, and especially in batteries. I just read another piece yesterday or 2 days ago, which I posted or linked at nukefree.org, about a breakthrough in the some of the battery technologies that they think are really going to make batteries 3-4 times as efficient as they are now. We're really looking here at a transition moment for the whole utility industry. I would assume, Tim Judson, if you had the clout in D.C. to stop this merger, which obviously Pepco wanted, you're going to have the clout now to proceed and really force a renewable transition in that region.
Well, I think that message has been clear. In fact, the D.C. PSC cited that very clearly, you know, in their decision today that they understood that the people the D.C. PSC has never seen the outpouring of public comments and been attendance of public hearings and that took place in the review of this takeover. And they saw quite clearly that it was really the force of the political will of the people of D.C. demanding a future that is going to be energy efficiency and solar power and renewables and not this traditional utility business model.
All right. We're here with Tim Judson and Dave Kraft, two great activists, longtime activists in the renewable and the green energy struggle, the Solartopian struggle for a green powered Earth. We're celebrating a victory. The failure of Exelon, the biggest nuclear reactor monster operator in the United States, 23 reactors, the failure for them to essentially take over a 2 million person rate base currently served by the Pepco company. They were trying to merge, or which is really just an acquisition, Pepco, and they were turned down by the top public service commission of Washington, D.C. Dave and Tim, can we assume that this is a permanent decision, or are they going to now pursue this in the courts? What happens next in the legal process?
Well, we're in a little bit of a, you know, limbo phase right now. The D.C. PSC hasn't actually published their their decision because I guess they want to, you know, proofread it to make it to make sure it's all watertight. Exelon will have the opportunity to appeal this, you know, whether to the D.C. PSC itself or into the courts. And, you know, they're being pretty tight-lipped about what they're going to do at this point. So they've got to decide within 30 days whether they think they're going to try to, you know, get this thing overturned.
And what do you think their prospects would be if they go ahead and try and overturn this?
Well, I mean, you know, that's for the lawyers to decide, really. I mean, you know, utility companies like Exelon will dump millions of dollars into a lawsuit. Paying, $1,000 an hour, legal firms to try to, create a legal argument. Like I said, the DC PSC was expected to come out with this decision weeks ago. And I think that, they were probably being very, very careful about it, about how they, how they reasoned this to make sure that it's as watertight as possible. And, I think that the public record really shows, it really carries the day anyway. I mean, we had, D.C. is, has a very sort of strong kind of grassroots democratic, kind of local governance structure. They have 40 different neighborhood commissions that review neighborhood issues. And 27 of those 40 ANCs, came out against this takeover. Not a single one supported it. And that was, reflected in, almost half of the city council members came out opposed to the deal. There was really just such an outpouring of public sentiment, against this merger, that the DC PSC is on very strong ground.
Great, I'm glad to hear that. It's a big deal. Now let's move on, Tim. I know you're somewhere. You may have time constraints. The show is going to go for an hour. If you need to sign off, please do. But let me ask you first of all about what's happening in upstate New York, and then we'll turn it over to Dave and let him tell us about Illinois.
Sure. Yeah, I'm actually here at a victory party with all the coalition in D.C.
I'm feeling
to take off soon, with New York, this is another front in the fight against Exelon. Exelon operates three reactors in the state of New York. One of them is a tiny little reactor called Ginnay near Rochester, which is for over 2 years now been known to be one of the most unprofitable nuclear plants in the country. And last year, Exelon basically threatened to close the reactor unless the state of New York agreed to have the utility. The local utility company in Rochester subsidized the continued operation of Ginnay. And we've been in a fight both at the Public Service Commission and at the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission to try to defeat this attempt to subsidize the continued operation of what is really the seventh oldest reactor in the world, the fourth oldest in the U.S., and the second smallest reactor in the U.S. If there's any nuke in the country that ought to be able to be closed, it's really Ginnay. And originally, Exelon and the utility company were told to cut a deal to keep Ginnay running through at least 2018. And we've been working with the Alliance for a Green Economy and other local groups in New York to stop this thing from going forward, and we've made a tremendous amount of progress. It's actually, we really highlighted the massive subsidy that Exelon is going to require to keep this nuke operational. It's really, on the tune of $70 million a year that Exelon is going to require from the tiny utility in Rochester, New York, to keep this nuke going. And what's amazing about it, and this is what we're seeing sort of happen in these different nuclear bailout cases, is that Exelon and the other nuclear corporations are arguing constantly that nuclear power is necessary to keep the lights on, that it's necessary for reliability, to avoid blackouts and that sort of thing. And in fact, what's come out in the course of this case in New York is that in fact that nuke is only needed for about, at this point, 20 to 40 hours during the summer, and for less than the amount of electricity the nuke puts out. But nuclear power plants don't operate for just 20 or 40 hours a year and at 20% of their power. They have to operate at, you know, full power all the time in order to remain operational. And so what's really, you know, going on is that they're talking about subsidizing the continued operation of this old nuke to the tune of thousands of times more than it would actually cost to produce electricity otherwise to meet the same need. And we've actually been able to get through to the regulators on this, and we're very hopeful that Ginna, you know, will end up shutting, within the next 2 to 3 years.
Fantastic. Well, we wish you well in that fight, and it would be really great to have that thing shut down. There are other reactors in New York. Do they also own? What are the other reactors that Exelon owns in New York?
Exelon owns the Nine Mile Point 1 and 2 reactors, which are just about 50 miles away from this one in Rochester.
Okay. All right, well, good luck with that. Tim Judson of the Nuclear Information Resource Service. Tim, you're welcome to stay on if you want to go. I feel guilty about keeping you away from the party.
I'm going to get going, but thank you so much for having me on. And you're definitely going to hear a lot of great stuff from Dave.
All right, well, have a few drinks on us, and we'll be back.
Congratulations, Tim.
Keep up your great work.
Thanks, you guys.
Thanks. All right, Tim Judson, thank you very much. Okay, Dave Kraft, that was Tim Judson of the Nuclear Information Resource Service, telling us firsthand about the tremendous victory, the Public Service Commission of Washington, D.C., turning down an attempted takeover by the Exelon nuke monster of the 2 million customers in the Baltimore, Washington area. Tim Judson, you live in the belly of the beast there, where Exelon has its headquarters in Chicago, and you are fighting them tooth and nail on a number of reactors in Illinois. I have been reading that the Clinton reactor and two more reactors at Quad Cities are now possible shutdown candidates in the short term in Illinois. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, that's correct. And actually, just to back up a little step here, what we're seeing today is we've won a battle, but it's a battle which is taking place within the context of a much bigger war, which I alluded to earlier. It's been this long-term campaign by the nuclear industry to gut renewables and efficiency and to provide subsidies for nuclear reactors that are unprofitable and losing money, such as the Ginna reactor in New York. And now, as you point out, the five reactors that Exelon has designated in Illinois. That would be
I named three. What are the other two? Clinton.
We have Clinton in central Illinois. We have Quad Cities 1 and 2, and we have the Byron reactors 1 and 2. So it's five total reactors in Illinois. Exelon claims has been losing them money for the last several years. They also maintain at the same time that overall the nuclear fleet in Illinois has been profitable, meaning the other reactors are picking up the slack in terms of the corporate book sheets. So a year ago, as part of the grander war, which is a little bit different than what happened in New York, Exelon went to the state legislature asking for a bailout of $1.6 billion over 5 years to essentially underwrite the losses for these five nuclear reactors moving forward. Well, I'm very grateful and glad to say that activists and all kinds of folks here in Illinois fought tooth and nail in the last legislative session to block that effort to get the bailout, because the way Exelon wrote the legislation, it not only would have granted them the $1.6 billion, but it essentially would have prevented any new renewable energy from being built in Illinois. At the same time, it would have discouraged energy efficiency. So it was all part of, as I was pointing out earlier, a national plan. This was the Illinois slice of it, to gut renewables and efficiency and to bail out these money-losing reactors here. Now, recently, there was an auction held to award utilities money on what's called the capacity market. There are two ways utilities make money. They charge you rates for the electrons that they sell, but they also gain money by the regions that they're in to guarantee into the future that they will have enough power plants operating to make sure that all the needs of the region can be met, and that's called the capacity market. These bids have to go in years in advance, and it turns out that the other day, just Friday of last week, the Quad Cities reactors failed to clear the capacity market bidding process, so they're not going to get any income from that. The Byron
reactors—they were too expensive.
Expensive, old. There were a lot of reasons. The bid that they put in was just much too high compared to the competitive bidders of all kinds, renewable energy sources, other nukes, coal plants, whoever. They just bid too high in this market, and so they were not allowed to get any capacity money. So this was a money loser. The Quad Cities reactors are the second oldest set of reactors in Illinois. They are of the same design and actually older than the ones that blew up and melted down in Japan, the GE Mark I reactors. So these were old plants. They had already gotten power up rates years ago. You pretty much squeezed out every bit of usefulness you possibly could, and they were granted a 20-year license extension. So these two reactors, Exelon has targeted and said, look, if we don't get this bailout by September 1st, we're going to have to make a decision as to whether to keep the plants open or close them down. So that's really what's been going on here in Illinois for a year. Is a kind
hold
of...
Hold on, Dave, yeah. That's six days away. That's a week away.
That's right. Well, this has been going on for a year. Last year, when Exelon announced these five reactors, they did it during an election year, which was kind of interesting, to panic pedal some of the legislators to act rashly by saying, well, you know, this could cost Illinois 2,300 jobs if we close these five reactors down. And to their credit, the Illinois legislature resisted all of these extortion threats and gloom and doom forecasts of what was going to happen. So I'm hoping, as we move forward, that if and when the same kind of legislation comes up, either in our fall veto session or in the spring legislative session, that this battle that was won today in Washington, D.C., is going to have a ripple effect on our Illinois legislature and also the other legislatures in New York and elsewhere, where Exelon is trying whatever means possible to subsidize these money-losing nukes. So that's the significance.
Are you deregulated or are you regulated in Illinois?
Interestingly enough, we are deregulated because back in the day, in the late 90s, it was Commonwealth Edison lobbyists. This was the predecessor to the Exelon Corporation. Just as they do now, they had a lot of power down in the Springfield legislature and persuaded the legislators that, yeah, time to change the market, no more regulation, move it to the market system. And that's what we've been under since the 90s.
Now, let's explain what an incredible scam this is. In the late 90s and into the early 2000s, the utility companies across the country that owned nuclear power plants went into the legislatures in Ohio and California, Illinois and elsewhere, and said, okay, we are guaranteed, under regulation, we're guaranteed a gargantuan, ridiculous, absurdly high profit. But we now want a deregulated market so we can go out and compete with our wonderful nuclear plants and make even more money and serve the public better. What a crock. And as part of deregulation, they demanded and got from the legislature billions of dollars to upgrade their nuclear plants because allegedly there were stranded costs and this is going to make them competitive. And so I have read estimates of upwards of $100 billion all across the country, especially in California, Ohio, and Illinois, that the utility companies took to on the basis of their nuclear plant so they could now go out and compete in a free market economy. Now, 10 to 15 years later, they're coming back and they're saying, well, you know, things have changed and the markets are faulty. That's what they use, term faulty markets. And we now have to be re-regulated so that we can get a guaranteed profit. Is that a fair assessment of what's going on here?
They haven't formally petitioned to go back to the regulated market scheme. I guess I misspoke earlier. I thought that Pepco was in that regulated situation. In Illinois, it's obviously we're not, and they're not asking that it be restored, but they're doing the next best thing, which is to say, keep us in the deregulated market so that when the market turns back in our favor, we can still take advantage of it. But in the meantime, bail us out. You know, so
right.
We want it both ways. And I would point out, I'm glad you brought up the stranded assets thing, which is a term not familiar to many of your listeners, but to sort of make that transition from the regulated to deregulated market, I've seen estimates in Crane's Chicago Business from that period which put the range of money that was given to the ComEd at that point somewhere between $6 and $11 billion just for Illinois alone.
Got
so
it.
They got money when the reactors were built. They got money when deregulation occurred and stranded costs were paid off. Now they're coming back and saying they want money because their market didn't work and they want to be bailed out. Now, they'll blame this market situation on renewables and natural gas. However, I can't say specifically for Exelon, but fleet-wide across the country, Mark Cooper of the Vermont School of Law has done some analysis and pointed out that what you also have in play here are increased operation and maintenance costs at older reactors, which is precisely the kinds of reactors at Quad Cities that aren't making money. So this has to be factored in, too, so that renewables don't become a whipping boy and an excuse to bail out reactors.
Well, we're talking about reactors now. These are big, complicated machines. They're operating 30 to 40 years already. I mean,
yes.
I don't know how many of our listeners are driving 40-year-old automobiles, but these are just gadgets, and they were designed in the 1960s, most of them.
That's right.
You know, Fukushima Unit 1, which blew up in 2011, was opened in 1970, for God's sakes. So it was 41 years old. And I assume these reactors in Illinois are of equal age, is that right?
That's right. Well, as I said, Dresden 2 and 3 and Quad Cities 1 and 2 are older and the same design as the reactors in Fukushima that exploded and melted down. The youngest reactors in Illinois, the Braidwood 1 and 2 reactors, officially went online in 1988. So they're already 27 years old, and that's the newest we have here.
They're the spring chickens of the group. That's amazing. So what are the chances now? Well, I guess we'll know in a fairly short period of time, or maybe we'll know. What are the chances, Dave Kraft of the Nuclear Energy Information Service in Chicago, that we will see three or more shutdowns of reactors in Illinois in the near future?
Well, our crystal ball is just as good as anybody else's, I guess, but we were telling legislators even last year when we were talking with them, we felt that there was probably a very strong economic case for the closure of Quad Cities 1 and 2 and the Clinton reactor down in central Illinois, which is a single-unit reactor, but it's a very large one. Reactors that they were threatening to close, Byron 1 and 2, are relatively new. They came online in the early 1980s, and we thought it was very unlikely that Exelon would pull the plug on those. And there are other indicators that also suggest that that is not the case. However, to make the situation look more dire to the legislators, we think that Exelon probably threw those two into the hopper for consideration to make it look like the bailout should occur much more rapidly.
Wow. So how much capacity between these five reactors, how much capacity are we talking about?
All right, off the top of my head, let me see if I can come up with something here for you. So we got 2,200 at Byron, about 1,800 at Quad Cities, and another 1,100 at Clinton.
So that's 5,100. That's 5,100 megawatts.
Yeah.
Of commercial of reactor capacity. Now, that is a huge chunk of power. Now, can Illinois keep the lights on and still lose 5,100 megawatts of capacity?
Now, there are two parts to that answer, Harvey. The first part is the actual question itself. Do we have an extra 5,100 megawatts to spare by other sources of all kinds? The legislature conducted a study late last year through early January, and they asked four state agencies to do an analysis on that. And both the Illinois Commerce Commission and the Illinois Power Agency concluded that while things might be tight initially, there was surplus power in the region to keep all the lights on, number one, except under a very unusual, bizarre set of circumstances dealing with weather and stuff like that. Illinois is an exporter of electricity. We actually generate 20% more than we use here ourselves. So we're a net exporter right now. And even if the 5,100 megawatts goes down in the region, there seem to be sufficient supplies to make sure that nobody's lights are going to go out. And that's the conclusion of the two agencies that did the study, which was released in January. Now, the other piece to that, the other part of the answer is, last year when Exelon dropped its announcement of the imminent closure of these reactors, at the same time, Illinois was in the process of fixing its existing renewable portfolio standard law, which took place initially in 2007. This is a law that requires all utilities to ramp up their use of renewable energy roughly 1, 1.5%, maybe 2% a year between now and 2025. Well, we've had a problem with that law. It was an unforeseen glitch that came about when some of the market went to aggregation of customers about 3 or 4 years ago. It had an unfortunate side effect that no one could foresee that prevented money that was collected for renewables to actually be paid out to companies to build the renewables. So this had to be fixed. And last year, there was a tentative agreement amongst all parties to fix that renewable portfolio standard to build more renewable energy. Well, when Exelon made this announcement, the fix got pulled out of the legislative session. It never was addressed. So what I'm driving at here is some people question whether renewables would be enough, or even efficiency and renewables would be enough to fill such a big gap. But we have to point out the difference between reality and self-fulfilling prophecy. If you don't fix the RPS, if you don't allow money to be spent to build renewables, then don't expect those renewables to generate electrons. So the bottom line here is that Exelon Corporation is the one responsible for renewables not getting built, and as a result, actually jeopardize the ability of the state to keep the lights on if these guys pull the plug on the reactors. So that's what I mean by a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's been a very well-orchestrated scheme to make nuclear the only choice that the legislators would have, which, of course, is false. So moving forward, because the legislation for Exelon did not pass the session, we now have an opportunity to go back to the legislators and say, hey, two things have happened. The EPA has dropped this carbon rule on all the states, and analyses show that we can not only do the original goal of the renewable portfolio standard, we can expand on it. And that would give you additional electrons to meet the needs if the nukes go down. So that's the next phase of the battle, which will take place either this fall or in the spring here in Illinois, is to fix that RPS and make it bigger than it was before so that the lights do stay on.
And what do you? How do you assess your chances? What do you think the odds are that 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 reactors will shut down on the basis of this battle in the next, say, year?
I'd say three for sure. Quad Cities, I think, is pretty definitely going to go. And Clinton, because it's a single reactor in a market, it's actually in a different ISO. The service territory is different. They're a likely candidate to go down as well. As I said, Byron is too new. I think it's too big of an asset for them to get rid of. So I think we're going to lose three nukes in Illinois.
Well, it couldn't happen to a nicer state. We're talking with Dave Kraft of the Nuclear Energy Information Service in Chicago. Dave has been an activist on this issue for longer than time and has done a great job. What is happening in the city of Chicago? I have read that the mayor is actually a renewable energy advocate. He's certainly no friend of the school system. But what's happening in the city with renewables, wind power, and so on?
Yeah, that's actually correct. A competing piece of legislation that came out even before the Exelon bill was something called the Illinois Clean Jobs Act, and it was cobbled together by a lot of different diverse interests, which included business people, it included institutions, it included environmental groups. This was released in early February, I want to say. And Mayor Emanuel jumped on it as an advocate. If the Illinois Clean Jobs Act is, the legislation that passes, it means ramping up renewables to 35% in Illinois instead of the 25% that it's currently mandated. It also sets an energy efficiency standard of 20% by the year 2020. And here's the best part of all for a lot of people. By doing that, it would create 32,000 new jobs statewide annually in these various sectors. So to his credit, Mayor Emanuel jumped on that, and he's been a very avid supporter of that piece of legislation. Now, as to the specifics of what's going on in the technology in the city, I'm not really up on that, so I really couldn't comment on that.
So are we going to see windmills on the shore of the Windy City? Anytime soon? Are there any there now?
Interesting you mention that, because one of the state legislators from the community just north of Chicago, the city of Evanston, where Northwestern University is, she has been promoting a project which would put wind turbines off the shore of Lake Michigan off the coast of Evanston. So, yes, there's a real possibility that that could be part of our compliance mechanism to meet the EPA carbon rule.
Well, I spoke in Chicago many years ago at New Trier High School, which is up, I don't know if it's in Evanston or it's in one of the suburbs.
It's right next
suburbs.
Door to Evanston, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they were talking about putting a windmill in the football field. And, which is, if you got a school, that's really the place to put it, out in the back there. And also in the town dump, which is the two major spots for urban windmills are, the sports fields at the high school. And the dump. Have any of the northern suburbs gone for wind yet?
Not that I'm aware of, not that I have heard. But, Harvey, let's keep in mind, though, that wind is actually best if it is a larger-type facility rather than incremental single windmills around. And as a solar expert, you would know that at least in densely populated urban areas where you don't have a lot of open space to begin with, there's a lot of opportunity for rooftop solar that is just not happening yet. I get tired of these nuclear advocates who say to me, do you know how many square miles of land you need for that would equal a nuclear power plant if you were to do it in solar? And all I can say back to them is, do you know how many square miles of unused flat roof space in the city of Chicago outside of the airports and everywhere else that's only good for puddles and pigeon poop,
Hey, well, answer soon. Thank you so much. Thanks to Tim Judson. We will see you next week. Thanks to the crew in New York on the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. Take care.
Okay, thank you.
Solartopia, don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world.
Well, we bit the apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost, and so we went digging into the ground and started to burn.